Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Secret languages surround us, from graffiti writers, gondoliers and gym rats to spies, sneakerheads and Swifties. Every group creates a private lingo or jargon and gestures that may elude the rest of the world. Well, that is, until now. Best-selling author and British writer Ben Schott joins me now to talk about his new book, which is called Schott's Significa, which, he tells us, is an indispensable field guide to the hidden lore and language of our modern age. Ben, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, what an extraordinary book it is. I mean, it's called Schott's Significa. What is a significa?
So significa is a word that doesn't exist. It's not in the Oxford English Dictionary. And I coined it in order to have like sort of virgin snow to carve a path down the mountain of language. The idea is it's things that are generally overlooked. So, for example, the language of graffiti writers. You see graffiti everywhere and you kind of ignore it. But you don't realize that they're having a private conversation amongst themselves that you can eavesdrop on.
Now, you distinguish the likes of Banksy from those who might do rural murals of hidden heroes in estates.
So there's a difference between graffiti writing and street art. So graffiti is by definition criminal vandalism, and it's called writing because it's basically letter-based. And street art is done essentially to charm the public, and graffiti is done to speak to other graffiti writers. And so by exploring the language of graffiti writers like Venetian gondoliers or London black cabbies, you begin to unlock how they think and how they view their world, to which we're sort of spectators normally.
When you investigate these worlds, I mean, the world of the gondolier, how many times did you have to pay them 60 euro a pop to go up and down the canals so you could decipher their language?
The trick is to buy them a drink. So you buy them a drink at Florian's, and then they will tell you not everything, but some things. So Venetian gondoliers is one of those. So there are 430, roughly, Venetian gondoliers servicing an annual tourist population of 30 million people.
Good pickings. So,
great, but it's this private, tiny, small world, and often it's a family. So there's a phrase, del ceppo, which is a chip, because they're often chips off the block of the family. You almost inherit the position of being a gondolier, and it's persuading them to talk to you is hard, and then persuading them that what they do every day is actually strange and interesting and maybe of curiosity to the rest of the world.
It's just their job.
Just their job. Every language, I bet this studio has its own terms and its own codes, you know. Every world has its own language, and my job is to go and persuade people, A, to talk to me, and B, that what they do every day is of interest.
Now, not alone do you write about this, but you have illustrations of, for example, the Italian's way of indicating whether or not they want a drink or a cup of coffee.
So the Italian hand gestures. So my wife is half Italian, and spending time there, you just discover that Italians can have an entire conversation just with their hands, and often do. And the difference between a cup of coffee, this is obviously radio, so it may be lost on your listeners, but the difference between going for a cup of coffee and going for a glass of wine is just a slight subtle change in the fingers you use when you put them to your mouth. Everybody knows this. If you say I'm hungry and you want to go for a meal, you twist two fingers like a fork twisting spaghetti. Due spaghetti. It's like, hey, should we go and get some food? It's amazing. And once you see it, you see them do it in the street.
And of course, people who are hard of hearing or who are deaf have their own language anyway.
Absolutely.
Which, if you like, is an extension, a much more sophisticated extension of what the Italians do every day.
Absolutely. And in fact, so sign language is also used. So there's a section on here of the language of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which was a kind of anti-capitalist movement in New York some years back. And they use hand signals to basically control big crowds and to create consensus of decision-making. And one of the ones they use is called uptwinkles, where you put your hands in the air and you wiggle your fingers. And that shows assent, which is sign language for applause. It's just absolutely charming.
Now, you say that reality TV has its own language. And in fact, some of the stuff I mean, I can't even repeat some of the terms that are jumping out of the page at me. But for example, a speed ramp, what is that in?
So speed ramp is, you'll see this when you, when the opening, so there'll be, the person will do their signature move to camera and it'll be sped up a little bit and then slow down to make them look dynamic and attractive. But there's other terms, there's the chicken count. So the chicken count is when you come back from an ad break and it's like, Ben is in the diary room, Simon is in the garden. And the chicken count is you count all the chickens, so you let people know where all the characters of your little group are, so then you can set the scene.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of editorial phrases.
And there are things like victory editing, so that you, in advance, knowing you've shot the entire series and you know who's going to win as editor.
Because the edit implies winning. There's also the purple edit. And the purple edit is you're going to kick someone out and they basically have had no screen time because no one likes them. So the purple edit is when you have to kind of do a quick edit to make them look vaguely important before you then expel them. I'm going to get the purple edit. I know that.
I know from my own experience in television, we had our own language and you just take it for granted. For example, if you're shooting an interview, the director might say, could you move your chair a nats? I don't know whether you've come across that.
I haven't.
A nat, G-N-A-T,
right.
And it's short for a nats whisker. In other words, move your chair a tiny, tiny amount.
So we have the hand signals of TV floor managers.
Mm-hmm.
Demonstrated by television's Nick Ross, who's my uncle, from Crime Watch fame. And so, you know, I persuaded him to come to my studio and do the hand signals. And again, it's a tiny little world that people know. You know, you're winding it up, stretch it out, going too long.
The cutthroat gesture means
cutthroat, like,
end it now. The other thing we would say, lose the lamp.
Oh, right.
Which means eliminate the lamp from the frame. Just take it away. That kind of thing.
I should take notes on this.
Now, I'm looking at hunting, and it's paired with sabbing.
So there's a language of fox hunting, and which always struck me as interesting. It's a historical language, and I explained the whole process of the hunt, which is hugely complicated and historic about the clothing and the structure and the way the hounds run and this kind of thing. But to make it slightly more interesting, I also thought, well, there's a whole language of hunt saboteurs. And these are the people who turn up in camo or all black to try and disrupt the hunt. So what I did was, the language of the hunt is in black text all the way through. And then the hunt saboteur language pops up in red to disrupt it. Because they often use the same terms in very different ways.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
It's an amazing, like, symbiosis of language.
Now, you are a punster, among other attributes. Double decanting the tattle of the psalm being not the river, but the sommelier.
The sommelier. So this is one of those examples of, you know, where normal civilians like us go to a posh restaurant and there's a sommelier. And most people feel intimidated. It's like, oh my God, this guy, he's going to rip me off. I'm going to have a $500 bottle of wine. This is too much. Actually, they have this incredible language and incredible culture. And what I've discovered is if the restaurant has a sommelier, always ask them for help. Indicate your price range on the menu. I'm in the shallow end myself, so to say, you know, and they will tell you. And they have this whole culture and world and language which helps them find the right wine for your meal.
There are terms I'd never heard of in connection with wine drinking. A speed bump. A pre-wine, pre-game, is the wine that you drink before you get your real wine.
Absolutely. Well, one of the disasters of drinking good wine in restaurants is that good wine often needs time to breathe and decant. So you go in, you order, you know, or you get your boss to order an expensive bottle of wine, and by the time they've opened it, it needs another hour. Mm. So you have like a quick cheeky bottle of, you know, some cheap Chardonnay, so you can wait for the elaborate claret to breathe.
Then there are big whales. What's a big whale?
So the whale is someone who spends a lot of money. And then there's the deep whale. And actually, this is a fun story. So when I wrote this piece, this is originally a chapter for a newspaper. The deep whale is someone who can spend $100,000 of wine on a meal. I had a fact checker who wrote back and said, you mean $10,000? This must be a typo. And I wrote back saying, no, $100,000. And she said, I don't believe you. Like, could you prove this is true? So I emailed a sommelier at a very fancy Manhattan restaurant to say, do people spend $100,000 on wine at a meal? And he wrote back saying, not infrequently.
Not infrequently.
Different world.
Now, there are all sorts of descriptions of wine drinkers. A cork dork.
Cork Dork is one who absolutely knows their wine and will tell you about it at tremendous length.
Hand-selling a particular wine.
So hand-selling is interesting. So this is like, often there'll be gems on the list that the sommelier particularly likes, and they will make a real effort. So often there'll be bargains. So for example, port and Madeira. No one drinks port or Madeira anymore. Back in the day, you know, people would drink port regularly at the end of the meal, and Madeira as well. And so often to try and shift bottles that they think are good, but people are intimidated by or don't really know, they will hand sell them and they'll say, listen, take a risk. You know, sometimes they'll even say, if you don't like it, you know, we'll take it back.
Fans. Fans, stands, furries and shippers.
So the world of fans and fandoms. So back in the day, and probably sort of 15, 20 years ago, the notion of being a fan was slightly sad, and the mainstream media sort of mocked the fans, the weird anoraks, you know, the people. Turns out fandom is this enormous market. So you have K-pop fans and you have Harry Potter fans, and almost everything now has a fandom. And when you dive into what it means to be a fan, you realize why they are such unbelievably lucrative and interesting little private groups.
You have a chapter on the manosphere.
Well, this is actually quite a depressing thing.
It is,
to write.
Isn't it?
The manosphere, for people who are lucky enough not to know it, is a sort of toxic masculinity. It's this sense that men have been dealt a hard hand in life and a sort of subordinate and now subjugated by women, which I think if you look around probably isn't quite true. But it is engulfing a lot of young people online. And I wrote this partly to educate myself and partly to work out sort of what, you know, the young people were watching, the young men were watching online, and trying to sort of disentangle some of the darker threads of this tapestry.
I mean, you have a description of someone who might be X-pilled, or someone who might be red-pilled, or someone who might be blue-pilled, or even purple-pilled.
So the blue pill, so this comes from The Matrix, and this notion of being red-pilled, as in taking the red pill, is like realizing the world is a conspiracy theory, you know, in this sense, against men. And it's this notion of seeing the truth, which I would say is not really the truth. It's interesting that they use the prism of The Matrix, given that it was written by two trans brothers who are now trans sisters, who they would probably not approve of as incel men.
The language of the London cabbie. Now, it's a lot based on rhyming slang, I'm sure it is.
A lot of Cockney rhyming slang. What's actually fascinating is, we spoke a little earlier about Venetian gondoliers. Venetian gondoliers and black cabbies are essentially the same people. They're both small groups within a small city with a tremendous pride of transport of what they do, and they're a sort of dying breed. And they have this whole glorious little language of types of customers, of locations. So, for example, meat on the bone will tell you that there's Paddington at Marylebone. Sorry, so there's passengers at Marylebone. There's meat on the bone.
Okay.
And so there's dozens of these phrases. And they are dying out, because what was like a white working class group is now, there's much more diversity of different cultures
and of course,
coming in.
Using Google Maps to get you around instead of having the knowledge.
You still have to do the knowledge. I mean, Uber drivers don't, but black cab drivers spend 3, 5, 7, 10 years learning every street, every theatre, every cinema, every magistrate's court. I mean, the list is insane.
And the test at the end of this, if you were getting to the final hurdle, you have to be able to tell them off the top of your head
Absolutely.
The quickest way from A to B.
But dozens of them. You have to learn dozens and dozens of runs. So they would say, you know, Bow Street Magistrate Court to the Ritz. And you have to do it faultlessly, without pausing, literally every street, every turn, where you pick up, where you set down. It is an encyclopedic exercise.
And you can't fail. You inevitably drop out before you
exactly.
fail.
You don't fail. You just, after about 10 years, you think, well, this is maybe too much of my life in a black cap. Now,
we should look at some of the creation of new language. And I'm looking at a piece you have on Variety magazine and the terms that have gone into the language which it coined.
So Variety, so there are several newspapers and magazines and journals that create their own little idiolect, their own language. And Variety is one of the oldest and the most famous. So Variety, for example, they don't talk about applause, they talk about mitting. So the mitting at the premiere, was boffo, as in good. And so this whole lensing, for example, is, you know, so, you know, the new film is Lensing Thursday, lensing to film. And there's hundreds of these in their slanguage dictionary.
I mean, the female singer is a shantuzi or a thrush. And it's straight out of Damon Runyon,
Absolutely.
Guys and Dolls.
And they have created this thing. And what's glorious is that the industry has absorbed it and taken it as their own. So what was a sort of a private joke now just becomes mainstream.
Terms like jailbait, coined in 1914 by them, flashback, coined in 1916, cliffhanger, coined in 1931, striptease, coined in 1936, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, no, it's, and but what's actually, so Private Eye has its own slang, Smash Hits back in the day had its own slang. Lots of magazines create little languages, and it draws readers in. And there's a section on the back about tabloid language. So, you know, boffin in death plunge. You know, it's like, you know exactly what that means. It's a little group of sort of journalistic slang that has come to define the kind of tabloid mentality.
Looking at Private Eye, Sood's Corner, of course, is a favourite. Order of the Brown Nose.
This is awarded for services to sycophancy.
The Curse of the Gnome is afflicted upon those who sue Private Eye.
Yes, never sue Private Eye is the answer. But also, you know, they called Elizabeth II Brenda. They called Charles III Brian or Bat Ears. Princess Diana was Cheryl for reasons I don't quite understand. And these were the kind of, and the joy of language in this sense is that you feel part of an in-group. And when you read it, you feel part of this gang of language.
And of course, the phrase which they coined, tired and emotional, has gone into the language pretty generally, I think.
Yes, I intend to get tired and emotional much later on today.
Or, now, it's a terrific book. It's called Schott's Significa, and it's described as, in various descriptions I've read so far, as a taxonomy. And I had to look up what a taxonomy is or is currently.
It's basically an organized collection of something. So if you have stamps, you have a taxonomy of stamps, and you basically order and structure them. It was basically the idea was to take order to what seems like chaotic language and to present it in a way where normal civilians, when we enter like these strange worlds, you have a vague inkling of what they're saying.
And you enter the bookies world as well, the tic-tac man who's becoming a thing of the past because the signs are no longer necessary when you've walkie-talkies.
So tic-tac was essentially destroyed by walkie-talkies, and I can't think there's more than 50, 100 people who can still tic-tac, which is the kind of glorious hand signals that you sometimes see on the TV now. What people don't know about tic-tac is there are these various signals that are universal, but every day each tic-tac crew had a thing called a twist card. And the twist card meant that today, if I'm signaling 33-1, I actually mean 10-1.
Ah.
So there was a coloured card. So what looked like common communication was actually subtly twisted every day by every different crew. So what looks hard was even harder at speed with a twist card.
And it is really, as I think it's been already described, as a bit of a Forrest Gump of a book.
Well, like a box of chocolates, you never know what you're going to get. But I can guarantee you they're all delicious.
Well, it's certainly hugely entertaining. It's called Schott's Significa, an unexpectedly essential guide to language. And it's in a very handsome hardback with loads and loads of illustrations. And its author, Ben Schott, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you for having me.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.